yesterday honorable members. We are going to get the briefing by the Department of Labor on the Employment Service Commitment Bill, Bill 8B of 2012. And we will be here this morning, and we again the afternoon finalizing the bill. So we will break at 1 and then come back at 14 hours. Honorable members, we have 2 apologies from Honorable Zola Lenzani and Honorable Onel Dibir. Those are the 2 apologies that we have. Other members will join us because our time is now going to pass and we have to start. I'll give this opportunity, but before that, I think we still have to know each other, even though I think we know each other. But we were meeting together last week, so I don't think it's necessary for us to introduce ourselves. I'll give this opportunity to the department, to the acting DG, Mr. Murudova, to take us through. Over to you, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, honorable members and chairperson. My name is Murudova, acting DG, and with me I have members from the department that can introduce themselves, including the special advisor.
I think Sheikh Mohamed Kweta from the State Oversight Office.
Thank you. My name is Martin Masvanda from the Department of Labor.
Good morning, Chairperson members. My name is Martin Lucas. I'm from the Department of Labor in Western Cape, Cape Town Office.
Okay, I think those are the only ones that we didn't know, if members would agree with me. But for you, I'm Priscilla Kemp, the Chairperson of Labor and Public Enterprises, the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. Members will introduce themselves so that, because I think some of you, it's your first time to come to the Select Committee. Members.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, everybody. I'm Priscilla Kemp, representing the Fish Gate.
Honorable ones, let us do not mature on cover to work. Then, Mutan Perry, one of my vision, the Valimpopo province, the members of our Hague Committee, and the Vanda Wipia Hague Committee. Honorable.
Good morning, I'm Herman Groenewald, representing the Northwest Province and member of the committee.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Patrick.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm going to be presenting the Employment Services Bill. This is one of the rest of the bills that the Department of Labor tabled were amendments. This is the only new bill that is a stand-alone bill. And this bill, Honorable Members, is a product of the process that started way back in 2007-8. As you all know, Honorable Members, that the Department of Labor is obliged under the Amendment Act to do extensive consultations. In the Department, just before the macro reorganization of the state, we were involved in a project that sought to refocus the Department in specific areas, in line with in various departments internationally. We secured the assistance of the ILO to do a comparative study across the ministers of labor internationally. And the outcome of that process was that the department should prioritize 3 areas of focus, and that is how we are constituted today. one out of the outcome of the study process and the review of the whole department was that our core focus would be on inspection and enforcement. Secondly, to focus on labor policy and industrial relations. Thirdly, to focus on public employment services, which is inclusive of unemployment insurance and compensation fund, because the two are basically active labor market interventions that assist people either when they are temporarily out of work as a result of loss of jobs or due to injuries. And all this were to be supported by program administration, which is corporate services. And that is how even to this day we are structured. Now, what was lacking on the employment side was a comprehensive legislation that brings together the employment services. Honorable members will remember that we had the Skills Development Act, which in the main supported both the employment and skills development component. Now, the president decided in 2009 to transfer the skills development component of the employment services, and we were left with a situation where we had a legislation that was sitting in two departments, the employment side, employment services component made with the labor department, where the skills development component was transferred to education. So we had a lacuna because in some instances you couldn't do regulations relating to employment services because the board is in the legislation, the National Skills Authority moved across, and therefore it could no longer go to the Minister of Labour. And what the legal section, the legal advisors and the presidency instructed us to do was to sort this problem out through a stand-alone legislation that would then repeal those sections that remained within the Skills Development Act. And that is how this process started way back in 2008. And we have been doing roadshows, going to cabinet, consulting at NEDLEC, as honorable members know that all the labor legislation has to go through that process. We have gone to cabinet four times, each time after public comments, after NEDLEC comments and the regulatory impact assessment, and so on. And finally, we came to Parliament after Cabinet was satisfied with the NEDLEC outcome process, which lasted for almost a year and a half. And the bill went to the Labour Portfolio Committee, where it was debated in the National Assembly. And before the National Assembly, the Labour Portfolio Committee also had hearings, and during the hearings we ended up with a number of additional amendments that are contained in the current bill that is before you. And honourable members, if we were to take the bill that was initially published in 2008 and the current bill that is in front of you, it has gone through extensive consultation and adjustments in the process. So in the main, this bill contributes to the government's objective. What I'm presenting is also in line with the memorandum of the objectives of health, which is at the back of the bill. It aims to contribute to government strategy around more jobs, decent work and sustainable livelihood, to promote employment preservation and to assist employers and workers to adapt to changing labor market conditions. This will be achieved through a number of institutional arrangements. Some are already in existence, some will be new, that are going to be established in the department to provide free services to citizens. And these free services include the registration of job seekers, placement opportunities, matching job seekers against registered opportunities, referral to education training, providing various information, and so on. And most importantly, and this is in line with a ILO conventions, as members would know that we are very active in the ILO convention. We took about 9 conventions that affect this bill, It was also given to the IO Employment Services Section to submit comments, which they did, and we have incorporated them, including the immigration and so on. Now, in addition, it allows the minister to issue regulations for specific sections of vacancies to be registered, and it empowers the minister to introduce schemes to promote the rehabilitation and reentry into employment of people who are injured on duties. And this is how it links the compensation fund, the rehabilitation programs, the what is currently called service product shelter employment, is the common way, and I'll come to the changes that we made and the employment services. The minister, in terms of this act, is going to have to work very closely with the Minister of Home Affairs, as honourable members know, and during a visit to various farms and other places. You will know that there is a large number of undocumented migrant workers who are employed and are being exploited because they don't necessarily have the papers in the various farms, and they are being used to work and during 8 days. Police are caught in and they jump fences and run away, leaving their pigs behind. So we addressed the problem because we had to make sure that there is synergy between the Immigration Act and the Employment Services Bill and the basic conditions of employment to address that problem. And we also have addressed the problem that has been placed by the AG for years around the legal status of the shelter department. As members will know, that the status dates back to 1943. They were established by a decree then, and ever since then they moved from one department to the other. And treasury, because of the subsidies that they give to these entities and to comply to the KFMA, we had to find the legal basis for this services. Now, in taking you clause by clause without going through all of them, chapter 1 in the main deals with definition, the purpose, the interpretation, and the administration of the act. Clause 1, like we said, provides for definition. 2, outlines the purpose of the act and specifies measures and institutional frameworks to achieve the purpose. 3, talks to the whole question of how do we give effect, that is the interpretation of this act in line with the Constitution. Clause 4 provides for the administration of the act by the DG and how the department can be structured and resources, that is resource to perform the function as outlined in the bill. Chapter 2 then explains what public employment services is all about. And in Chapter 2, Clause 5, it provides in detail the functions of the public employment services, which includes the matching, registration of job seekers, opportunities, placing, advising work seekers on social security benefits, people with disability, rural communities, and so on. So in detail, chapter clause 5 explains those functions that are provided free of charge. And as you may know, honorable members, this has become an attractive business where the private employment agencies are trading in human beings to provide services that ordinarily should be provided free of charge by government, and in the process making a lot of money, and that is why the regulation aspect comes in. And the benefits, we have done research prior to this legislation that indicate that if government must step in that area and eliminate the undue practices, you are all familiar. of labor broadcasting and so on. And that is because if government is to provide the services free, get people to know where to find the information, to find jobs, you eliminate all the hardships on young people and work seekers, and you facilitate their entry. And this, honorable members, is something that is governed by a convention that all countries, more than 154 member states of ILO, those that have basically adopted the declaration and those that have not, have to subscribe to the spirit of the convention. Again, clause 6 gives the minister powers to establish schemes. We know the whole question of youth unemployment is a major issue in the country. And other countries that we have been working with, ministries of labor, have, and I think in this country we used to have this component very well under the Skills Development Act funded under the National Skills Fund. It's just that with the transfer, the function fell in the, you know, nowhere, and as such, it was never taken up, and the Minister of Education also was very supportive in this area around layoffs, and we are in discussion around how they can actually assist us from the National Skills Fund to continue that program, because during the first 10 years of skills development, more than 4 million people went through this program, 3 months programs and so on, and in the main they were able to find various employment, and since we started, we stopped the program. I'm sure honorable members will know that if you go anywhere nowadays, be it plumbing, brick laying, simple jobs around plastering and so on, those are areas where the undocumented migrant workers have now catch up the space, because our people have stopped, or the young people that are growing up are not getting an opportunity to learn in some of those programs so that they can use them to end a living. Clause 8 talks to that is protecting employment conditions and opportunities for South African citizens and permanent residents. But it also aligns with the Immigration Act by prohibiting the employment of foreign nationals without a work visa issued in terms of the Immigration Act. Basically, the Immigration Act says, and I'm sure all of you when travel everywhere, when you apply for a visa, the conditions that you cannot take employment. If you take employment, the person who employs you is also equal to it. It's not in terms of the this law, it's in terms of the Immigration Act. However, employers, especially in South Africa, have used all sorts of loopholes and excuses to employ thousands of undocumented migrant workers without the necessary payment. And Home Affairs basically says, look, let's work together on this issue. And what happens, honorable members, is that if a Home Affairs workers conduct their own inspection and they catch an employer having undocumented migrant workers in their employ, two things happen. Normally the employer is charged and the undocumented migrant worker is arrested. They are taken to the deadline and then the next minute they are deported. When the employer goes to court, the case gets thrown out because the people to lead evidence against the employers are not in the country. And the employee left the country without either in some cases their pay being paid and so on. Now what we have done in terms of this clause is two things. The one is that yes, we must help people who are not documented to also enjoy their rights as workers. And the reason is because the ILO Convention, including our Constitution, protect anyone, documented or undocumented, as a worker in the country to also have rights. So what we are doing in terms of this clause is to say, even though you may have been employed without the necessary payment, So it will hold the employer accountable to pay all the social benefits that were not paid because the worker was not paid. And we will work with Home Affairs to make sure that before the deportation and all those kinds of things, that worker is paid all the money that are due to them. And this is in line with the FADAC agreement that we must standardize the labor relations standard across the region, because employers would normally exploit workers from one region or operate in Botswana and sell products in South Africa whilst exploiting other workers from Botswana or Swaziland. And I think in the Ministries of Labor and Social Affairs, we have identified that problem. We are working toward making sure that the standards in Zimbabwe, in Swaziland and all that are the same on health and safety and so on, so that an employer is not able to run from South Africa to operate from Zimbabwe thinking that the labor standards will be inferior to South Africa or vice versa, and to also treat citizens of the region and ultimately of the whole continent equally. Because in an environment where you have uneven standards, some of you may recall what used to happen in the old TBDC states and self-governing territories. In the IT zones, unions would not be allowed. And the minute the labor standards vary, the employer is able, that is firstly the province, uses that to attract business to invest in their area, and they use the lowering of standards as an attraction. And ultimately the workers in that section do not enjoy the standards. So I think we debated this matter extensively at NEDLEC, and all of us agreed at NEDLEC that we need to deal with that problem. Migration has moved from just a Home Affairs issue of spending passports to an issue of economic matter. People move from one area to the other simply because they are trying to earn a livelihood, and that is why Home Affairs has also commended the department and worked with us in addressing this issue, because they believe that it is becoming a matter that is beyond them, and it needs the Department of Labor to intervene. Clause 9 is part of that. It prohibits an employer from requiring or permitting a person that came into the country with a specific visa or work permit to do work which is not relating to their work permit. You all know this matter around, especially in human trafficking, massage parlors and all that. They will bring in a person, say this person is coming to do a massage and all that. Once they are in the country, they are involved in brothels, they are involved in a whole range of things. So basically, if an employer deviates from the conditions of the visa, that would have been approved. Immediately it says that that person must be taken back because they've actually deviated from the visa issued by Immigration Act. And it in turn allows the minister to make regulations on to register vacancies. Now this matter was raised during RIA, the regulatory impact assessment, saying that it will cause undue pressure on business and even add to the cost of business. But if honorable members read the clause carefully, it says it may, and that clause is in line with the current Act, Section 23 of the Skill Development Act. It's taken as it is, it's not a new thing. It basically gives the minister the necessary power in specific categories should the situation or condition arise for the minister to require employers to register vacancies in those areas. And I can give you a lot of examples. Currently, honorable members, especially in farms and in a number of areas, employers would come, a federal determination is passed to say, pay these people X amount. Then some employers would say, no, we can't afford that money because our business is not viable and all that and all that. And they ask for variation to pay, let's say, a little of 100 and whatever said by the minister to pay 85. Now, once the minister include thousands of people from Zimbabwe, thousands of people from Swaziland and all that, and to use the determination to pay them a lower amount than what was said because it was granted. Now what then does is that it sets the locals against the foreigners, because what then happens is that locals see foreign workers as settling for lower standards, lower salaries than what they are prepared to take, and then they are prepared to work long hours without enjoying the necessary conditions and so on. And basically what this does says, in some of these areas, the minister would say, if you have vacancies advertised so that we can help you in terms of looking for South Africans that are willing and are prepared to work in your farms, but at the same time we cannot compromise on things like safety, living conditions and so on. And I think at that level everyone agreed around that issue, because the issue was not like every company is going to want the president signs this bill into hand to register every vacancy that exists in their in their company. That was blown completely out of proportion. This clause is not saying that. And clause 11 also provides for the kind of information that the department may want. And also clause 12 provides for the sources of funding that can be utilized to provide these employment services to the citizens of the country. Clause 13 talks, as part of chapter 3, talks to the registration of private employment agencies. Now, I need to take some few minutes on this one, honorable members. Under the Skills Development Act and the ILO Convention, private employment agencies were only those that were providing services such as recruiting people, placing them in jobs, and on successful placement, charge the employer for employment, and there was no triangular relationship. When we discussed the Labor Relations Amendment Act, Section 198, and bringing in the temporary employment agencies, that's where the overlap comes in, because there are a lot of temporary employment agencies that also operate as private employment agencies. So that is why this act and the Labor Relations Act are aligned. And the whole idea is that all private employment agencies, including temporary employment agencies, will have to be registered according to a criteria that the minister will determine. And they will have to indicate the type of business they are involved in. This does not mean that if a company is registered in terms of the Companies Act, they will be registered for the first time with the employment services register. This basically says in those instances when they want to provide those services, they need to register so that we can work with inspectors to make sure that the abuse of workers is not practiced. And if we found any traces of abuse, that is why there is a fine. And that is why their certificate of operating as a temporary employment agency involved in the placing of people and be revoked. That was the reason. And the Labor Relations Act makes provision for the related legislation, which means the employment services legislation will take the responsibility of the registration process so that there's no duplication. Clause 14 prohibits private employment agencies from performing acts that include providing false information, performing functions that they are not registered for. Let me give you an example. A company may require a CEO or a person to work in a particular area. Now, some agencies will come and recruit Mr. Rashivanda and take him to that company, having falsified his CV, and they will then get certain amount of money from the company. 3 months down the line, the company discovers that no, we've paid this agency a lot of money, and Mr. Rashivanda is not the caliber of person that minister may say in the case of CEOs and all that, soccer players, professionals involved in music and so on. In the main, those people don't look for jobs themselves. They would go to the agent and say, look, I want to sing, but you don't talk to me, talk to my agent. So the agent is entitled, like boxers, for instance. The agent, in those instances, will be entitled to charge the work seeker a certain proportion of their income for his or her fees. So those are the categories that will be excluded. But for ordinary workers that are vulnerable, they can't charge those workers to pay fees. But as Mr. Kim, to honorable members, you know of various cases where people have been asked to put in, to go to a bank, deposit maybe 250 or 500 rand guaranteed for a job, and only to find that when they go to that place where they are asked to come to go in, it's just a fax machine or people rented the office just for one day or so. And the bank account where if they take money, it was opened 2 days, in 3 days' time, all the money has been withdrawn. And you can imagine if an advert goes to newspapers with a guarantee for job, and that the only condition for you to get a job, you produce a receipt that says you have deposited 500 rand. In less than 24 hours, you can imagine how many people would have deposited that amount of money with the hope of getting jobs. And we're getting all these cases, and currently, because we don't have a legislation to deal with that problem, that is why you are finding a lot of private employment agencies, some if not registered, involved in those kind of scams. And police would then say, no, go and open civil cases. But in most cases, they're very difficult to chase because very often the accounts they use will be fraudulent and so on. Those 16 and 17 specifies the information that the private employment agency may keep and must actually safeguard and show confidentiality. And this is done simply because a lot of agencies are involved in human trafficking. Honorable members may know of incidences of a lot of young people. Some of them go on ships, some of them are recruited, they are promised a job overseas, and the next thing when you find out they are in a prison somewhere because they were used as drug mules, and so on and so on. And what this does is that if the information is provided for employment purposes, the agencies cannot use that information to pass it on to somebody as scrupulous who can end up using that information to say, I found your information from an agency, please come in for interview, only to find that they are calling that young person for something else that is not related to the kind of jobs that they were looking for. 18 and 19 provides powers and conditions under which the registrar in charge of registering private employment agencies will be able to cancel the license to operate as a private employment agency. 20 and 21 provides for the establishment of the Employment Services Board. As you notice that this act provides for the minister to make a number of regulations and guidelines. There is a limit to the amount of information, processes and detail that we can put into the bill. And the Employment Services Board will have to assist the minister in a number of regulations that will operationalize this bill. And in this session, the 22, it provides for the functions of the board, and 23 up to 28 provides for how this board is going to operate, how members of the board are supposed to conduct themselves, how they can design, how they are supposed to be supported by the Department of Labor officials to fulfill their functions. and 29 provide for the, that is how the board is supposed to be assisted to perform its functions of regulations, and that the DG will assume responsibility of making sure that they have those resources. And actually deals with the reporting obligations, and that also goes to yourself as well, where you can summon the Employment Services Board if you realize that certain things are not working in line with what you want to see, to come and explain to members of Parliament why they're not assisting or not doing their functions. 31 and 32 is taken as is from the current Skills Development Act. This is the one section that the President left untouched, and what has actually happened was that this section, the things that changes are the number, but the section is taken as is from the current Skills Development Act. That is 81, 82 on the establishment, and 33, 34 on the composition of productivity as a 35 appointment of the CEO, 36 has to do with the powers of the minister to dissolve the board. 37 and 38 has to do with the constitution of the productivity and how members can be disqualified from the board. And clause 39 and 40 provides for how board members are supposed to be remunerated in participating in the entity. And 41 deals with the reporting obligations of the board to the minister and obviously Parliament and various committee of public everyone given public enterprise labor portfolio committee and so on. Chapter 6 addresses the legal problem that we've been having with regard to what is today commonly known as sheltered employment factors. Now, honourable members, I must be upfront that the disability movement were not happy with sheltered employment factors. We came up with protected employment factors, and they were not happy with that either. And during the discussions, we looked at the United Nations Convention, something that was suggested by the disability groups. And I think I need to make this distinction very, very clear. If any one of us here gets involved in an accident, loses an eyesight and all that, it doesn't mean that because there are these factors, you have to go and work there. You can get assistive devices, you can be assisted, and you can continue to perform the normal function as long as you have the necessary assistive devices, computers that can assist you, and so on. Factors of this nature are acknowledged in the United Nations conventions because they describe different types of people with disability. And these factors are only men and wherever they've been established across the world. They are meant for a specific set of people that have a disability, that have long-term physical, mental, and intellectual or sensory impairment, which in interaction with various barriers may hinder their full and effective participation in society on an equal basis with others. So that is the distinction that is very clear. So these people, before they come in there, they would have to be assessed to be checked that they fall within this category, and the disability movement agreed and they suggested that we use this definition to aid identify the kind of people that will work in those factories. And secondly, they suggested that we move away from protected and supported, protected and sheltered to supported. And these are the amendments that were effected in the labor highlighted in red two new penalties that have been added, and this was not necessarily new. We sought to make sure that any employer who reads this bill reads it also bearing in mind what the Immigration Act says. And basically what this bill says is that if you employ a person without the necessary papers, you will be fined, and the fines imposed on you will be in terms of the Immigration Act. That is what the clauses that have been added are trying to say. And in clause 51, it provides for the procedures that the minister must follow when delegating functions to the director general and officials in the department. And 52 set out issues in respect of which the minister may make regulations. And 53 provides for the transitional provisions. As honorable members may know, the first set of transitional provisions has to do with the current arrangements of the sheltered employment. The other ones have to do with the productivity SA. And the third has to deal with the whole question of the movement from the current skills development to the new employment services. We could not repeal the skills development and since 2008 until this employment services bill is passed, because if you did that, then you would have had a lacuna in the process. And we also provide for the fines and so on. 54 provides for the job title and commitment of the act, and the three schedules, like I said, provides for the repeal of the sections of the skills development act. Schedule 2 provides for the transitional provisions, and 3 provides for the contravention. Now, like we said, we are in the process with ARAD and you know where we are. Having worked with the state advisors and they recommended the procedure within which the bill must be dealt with. And we have gone to the National Assembly, and we believe that with this presentation, the history and the explanation, honorable members of the staff committee on labor and social, that is a public enterprise, can engage us on any aspects that they may be of the view, and hopefully we will see that we go to the National Council of Provinces and finally bring in a very long and tedious process that started almost 5 years ago to an end with the President signing this to an end. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Acting Deputy. I didn't want to stop you when Honorable Shibande was coming in. I didn't want to disturb you, but we welcome you, Honorable Shibande. For those who don't know Honorable Shibande, because we've got new members that came today, Honorable Shibande, for the Department of Labor. He is Honorable Shibande, representing Mpumalanga, the province where the sunrise is, in the National Council of Provinces. Maybe for the record, so that he, when he speaks, he knows who he is speaking to. Can you just introduce yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Honorable We have to be greeted. My name is Martin Rashman, from Shiva to me. Maybe our ancestors can explain it.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. My name is Martin Lucas from the Department here in Cape Town.
I'm in Chair Wong Amin Kweta from the Office of the Assistant Advisors.
Thank you. Honorable members, we've been listening to the background of the Employment Services Bill and also the Honorable Minister. Moreover, the MTDG has gone through close by close to explain it further after the background. Can we now engage Honorable Mabuja, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Groenewald, Honorable Shubande in that order? Thank you.
In fact, just acknowledge the question before we proceed. I heard you talking about Mr. Joe from Mpumalanga. He's coming here right from the province. I heard you talking about Mpumalanga. Did you try again to try to?
No, I think I was talking about Honorable Shubande. Yeah, I was introducing Honorable Shubande to the department, to those members who don't know him, who are the first. Okay, thank you. Honorable Jacobs?
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. I don't want to be irrelevant. I'll pose some questions which I'll need each and answers, so that I'm able to get asked whatever I want to ask. And also I heard you saying this is a presentation, and in the afternoon we'll be finalizing this. I don't know whether I was just here to survive us then. Because I think it would be a genius to say you present in the afternoon, you finalize. I had thought maybe there would be a presentation tomorrow. We finalize this. But either this way, maybe we can proceed with this. Okay. I just want to check. This really entails many things. Public employment, what about productivity, private employment, and so on. I just want to take the intention of the bill and how does each and every one of these entities come to one another. Because I just want to check on the issue of this protected employment services, supported employment services. Also here, there's the employment of youth. How are they meeting to one another? Because what I'm thinking, the structure that I want, you remember we went to Shattered Employment Services, but it's in Cape Town, Eastern Cape. And then we said this Shattered Employment, it has people with experience, with the skills, who can assist the youth to get the skills. Is this being trying to achieve that? Because maybe if I can get clarity on that one first before I can ask you any other questions.
Thank you. The question from my side.
Sorry, before you come in, I want to clarify you on the issue of getting the briefing today. We have allocated the whole day from now we will break. After the clarification, we will break, and then on everything that needs to be cleared by the department, they will do that, and then we will come back in the afternoon. So that's how we have planned to finalize the bill. Tomorrow we have planned for something else also. Tomorrow we've got the post. Something in the post office today that we will be dealing with. Thank you. I hope that clarifies. Honorable
Groenewald. Thank you, Chairperson. Basically, I've got the same question as the Honorable Lee regarding the handling of the bill during the day. I really feel after this presentation, we must go in and look into the bill again by ourselves. And to do it this afternoon, the time is too short. I feel we must have for yourself, clear us about each and every clause.
Well, I should think
chairperson. I have, on certain clauses, I have questions, and maybe just for clarity at this stage from the department, I appreciate if you can give us more clarity on clause 5. I believe that the bill should be allowed for alternate models to match work seekers with work opportunities. And in clause 8, there I also feel that while all countries have measures to protect the local labor, it is not always easy to compare the skills with levels required for certain tasks, or to determine whether others, and I will use an example here, when we look at the welders, we have a shortage on Madupi at that stage. If we haven't the opportunity to bring people in from outside, the job will stop, and it will cost the economy of South Africa millions of rand at that stage. So I feel that we must bring in when there's a certain need on that type of jobs. We must have the opportunity or ability to bring people in from outside to do the job in South Africa. And that is not necessary for the cost of South Africa workers, because we haven't got the skills in South Africa to do the job. Okay, there's other questions, but I'll continue. Can I carry on? Thank you, Chairperson. Also, in clause 10, if you can give us more clarity about the vacancies essential to achieve productivity, I think that is what I basically said now, also in clause 8. But if you can give us more clarity on clause 10 as well. And then clause 12. I've had a problem there with, we've got millions of rands, or billions of rands to the company, and that was contributed by the employers and employees. The primary task of these entities is to provide insurance and not to fund these ineffective government initiatives. So, if you can give me more clarity about that as well, because I feel we use money for things that is not necessary. And the last one is in clause 13. This is another step of labor brokers, and we find the forced differentiation between the two sets of regulations unnecessary and restrictive for a sector that is trying to match job seekers with vacancies. Thank you. If you can give us more clarity for me regarding clause 13 as well, I would appreciate it.
Morning to everyone. First of all, everybody is for what you said, because you check my slogan, they're not my link. But certainly, you see a little concerned the way sometimes you approach things. Because, number one, I want to thank the department cause was supposed to be appealed long ago. Maybe if you can elaborate how to think about that political situation. And then go on page 10, verse number 8. See, your explanation there, I was hinting about some of the motivation when you explained, but go, may you please elaborate further on what you see. You said that this is to protect the employment condition of opportunities for South Africans, citizens, and tenants, residents, you know, something like that, so I won't go blah, 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 blah. But my little experience, we had a place where I'm coming from, in particular, Mpumalanga and Limpopo, training, and also around the church, the Sutu, Botswana, whereby, let me put this specifically for Mpumalanga because it's very positional workers. Look, I don't know how we would be maybe assisting that one, because the thing is, Botswana, while we are trying to come up with the bills, but some of the employers, they are continuing bring these elements to citizens when it comes from outside the country. Because they take them as cheap labors. And maybe if this bill, if it's going to assist us to have maybe more teeth to bite, well, I'll understand. But how to prevent that one? I'll put another example which is mushrooming at the moment as I'm talking to you. See, like it or not, it is a fact for this illegal miners which are regarding themselves as my workers. I'll put an example. Do you still remember Mama what happened in Barbaton? They went there illegally, not organized by somebody, but once an accident happened there, the government is charged that they go and arrest those people there. As I'm talking to you now, there is an illegal mining happening around Ekinville in Benoni. So how are we protecting that? Because we have laws which are going to protect that in order to minimize those particular challenges. And then also on page 11, you see, on page 11, I think it was number 9, where you spoke about this, it was number 9, which an employer from recruiting a permanent foreign national to perform work. Even with that, we must have a law to protect it, not even permanent, I mean foreigners, whatever. But I'll put an example. Do you still remember our country was open naked with some people recruiting for the security companies? They pretend as security companies while they recruit those people and use them as missionaries. To still feel as like what happened years ago in Zimbabwe, where even the son of Makatesha was involved when they were arrested. And some of the politicians in parliament were so focused, Zimbabwe, 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 while they were foreigners and missionaries. As long as we don't have, you know, we must have a laws which will stipulate also in those regards that, because these people, they were taken from outside, some of them bring them here in South Africa having these stinky documents. That's why I'm happy if you involve also the Home Affairs, and then taken out again to become missionaries. So we must have a clause which is going to protect us in that mustn't happen. Because at the end, who's seeing the news is South Africa. And people are pointing a finger at your department that favor is unable to hear 1, 2, 3 while there's no debt in some of the employers, because there's no law or clause which is protecting that to never appear. And then again, another thing which I would put in example also, well, there is an allegation that in the new dispensation that there is a new section of employment inside the sea. There are people who are mining inside the sea, including minerals and also oil, etc. Do we have anything to protect that? In particular, because what is happening on us those regards, it's alleged that sometimes we bring people in the presence of their aspirations from somewhere to get what to do. But at the end, if anything happens, they'll come back to the government of South Africa. think you touched here to also the issue of labor brokers. I think we must have a law which is protecting it. I'll put an example. If as a company we feel that labor brokers is an alternative way to do what it would say it. If we feel that labor brokers is not something our proper in this society, we must also say it. You know what? Some of the people, we can have this act, this thing, and let it pass if possible. But some of the people undermine us through the issue of labor brokers. Because with the labor brokers, it's up to them whether they employ, they help companies for permanent workers, job seekers, or they help companies for temporary job seekers. So these are some of the challenges. Because if we don't have a law dealing with those things specific, therefore we'll be having challenges, continuous challenges. So your explanation, it was accurate when we were explaining about, we made an example about the artists which are coming from outside and etc. etc. But if with them, we don't have any practical, assurance with some of them, because most of them, when they come, they pretend to be artists. Very few work for artists, some just do it. When they get inside, they do something else. Last month, last but not least, which is why, in terms of the issue of labor, it is alleged that there is a circuit or circuits alongside the borders where they recruit women in particular. I don't speak about the women which are child trafficking, but purposely so. Are heavily expected so that they can give birth to kids to fight. You know, they are killing to death with what they do. Therefore, it challenges us then that besides the issue of home affairs, we must involve our departments to be involved in terms of some of this so that we can protect those things to happen. Because at the end, once you give birth here, you can't go home, must wait so that the child could go to clinic. And at the end, are these people what do we doing at the moment? I'll come later. Come back later, gentlemen.
Thank you. Honorable Mabijan?
I'd like people to be very clear on what I'm going to say. I'm not being xenophobic, and I'm very much aware that sex are sex, but the truth is the truth, and it's about sex. This is what I want to say, so that I will clarify, so that I understand clearly. We have a lot of unemployment of South Africans. And now, we are seated here, we are discussing, and we should say, people from outside should come here with documents indicating their areas of jobs so that they are able to work what they are coming here for. Whereas we have a lot of people here, more especially the youth, etc., who are not working. Meaning that we are encouraging people from outside to come inside to do the job that is supposed to be done by the citizens here. And I'm not that comfortable. Because we are seated with a big problem of unemployment. And if it's because our people in here do not have those skills, why are we not bothered to bring up to standard so that we do not end up with a lot of hooligans stealing in our houses? They are robbing people, they are all those crimes, because they do not have those skills which those who are coming from outside inside here do have. For instance, last week on a Sunday at 2 a.m., I was running as an old woman after a person who wanted to come inside my house, and I was alone in the house, but I had strength to open the door and chase that man, and he ran away. What would have happened if I was deep in the sleep? I could have been killed or raped or put down all those things because they do not have jobs. And maybe those things are done by the people who come from outside to inside, who do not have skills, who are just like those of South Africa without skills. Now they start learning the music of stealing and housebreaking, all those things. I have this request to just to make me understand the rationale of that, because I'm still not comfortable. If you can expatiate this so that I understand. I'm not against it, I just want to have the gist of it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, honorable members. APBG clauses 42 to 47. If you can please clarify. The sheltered employment factories in terms of the amendment of this will now be referred to as supported, if I understood well, as supported employment enterprises, meaning with sheltered and factories have been substituted by supporters, supported and enterprises respectively. If you can just clarify that. And also, after the president has signed and the bill is now going to be implemented, what monitoring mechanisms are going to be there to make sure that in all corners, as you've been listening to the honorable members, in all corners of the country, everyone is going to abide by this legislation. Because it's not that we didn't have anything, but what is happening, it's like people are ignoring APBG. People are ignoring the laws that are being passed by Parliament and do their own things. For example, in my constituency, a lot of farms in Hazel, you can go in each and every farm. You'll find people who are working and who are not South Africans, but what do we do? What many monetary mechanisms are going to be there? Over to you, sir. You can respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
FTDG, Honorable Jacob.
Yeah, Chair, I don't know whether my case will be special because I had requested for an instant answer so that I can answer the questions that I had. So I don't know, maybe you can respond after that. I'll put the questions after I'm going to respond. Otherwise, you can respond to all the questions.
I think you still remember the question that was raised, and then Honorable Jacobs will raise his question.
No, thank you for questions, Chairperson, Honorable Members. I think that the first question by Honorable Jacobs, the purpose of this Act is clearly defined in two places. Firstly, the preamble of the bill and the purpose of the Act is very clear on what the intentions of these bills are. The relationship between, and this goes also to a question raised by Honorable Zunamad. I think whilst there is a perception that the funds are insurances, there are conventions that govern the operation of the funds. The funds are not necessarily insurances as they are commonly known. The Cape Town Airport, most of the highways in the Gauteng area and elsewhere were built using investment from the funds as part of the job creation process, and also because you cannot collect money and put it only in a bank without strategic investment. And the funds are on record of giving money to organizations such as IDCs,
try and invest in areas that create jobs, including Gautrain. The difficulty that we have and the linkages here is basically to try and force those companies in the recruitment process to make sure that they recruit people who are supposed to be directly benefiting. There are a lot of children of the very same workers that are contributing to the funds, and yet when it comes to the building of these areas and so on, the funds have not been clear on the recruitment process of the people to work in those projects, and basically we're linking and tightening the investment of those funds with the projects that people are actually embarking upon, because 2.1a is very clear. Employment services is about promotion of employment and making sure that people have access to employment and new entrants have opportunities to work opportunities that arise and so on. So, Honorable Jacobs, I thought that this section is part of the plan, also the purpose of the Act and what that we intend to do, because anything that and bodies such as productivity is about employment, because in the absence of productivity promotions, the opposite of what normally happens is that companies close down their retention workers and employment, those people then end up without jobs. They come to UI, we provide them a temporary relief, it will be 8 months, we can come up with a new bill to extend that benefit to more than that. But the reality is that unless we do something, those people will get a temporary relief and they will be out, and they are going to come back to the queues in the department to look for employment. The same thing with people who get injured. They get rehabilitated. If they cannot be integrated, they are out of jobs. Protected or what we call supported employment sector, that is supported employment enterprise, is basically to say people with disabilities also have a right to a living, and unless we create special measures for them to also play an active role in society, they will be left out there. So this is how all these things link. And we try in the department to draw a distinction that this law is about getting people into employment, because it's about them. There are laws such as the basic conditions of employment, which regulates the question of the minimum standards that every worker is supposed to enjoy. The Labor Relations Act regulates the relationship, whereas the employment equity is about changing the demographics and so on. So I think that distinction must be clarified and explained. The COIDA Act is about health and the occupational health and safety, and whereas the others, UI and compensation fund, concentrate on injuries and health. So this one is specifically about employment. I'll try, Honorable Chairperson, to clarify questions raised by Honorable Grunewald and those raised by Honorable
Acting Minister, after you have clarified, can we give Honorable Jacobs an opportunity to raise his questions, so that when you respond, you will respond to all the questions? Over to you, Honorable Jacobs.
Yeah, I'll ask questions, although I'm not satisfied. He has not responded to actually what I want. Because what I'm interested in is this bill addressing the issue of the youth who do not have the skills. Because we have said this sheltered employment can give youth the skills. Because in these sheltered employment factories, we have people who got the skills, and it's easy for us that we can take the youth to go and train in those sheltered employment factories, so that they must have skills, and after that they can move out and go and work. That was my main question. I wanted to understand that whether what we are discussing there, it is what I'm thinking, not what I think, what we have proposed earlier, after we have gone to those sheltered employment services, where we said there are a lot of skills in this factory,
and our youth don't have skills. Why don't we take these youth to those centers and get the skills? So that's what I want to know before I can answer any question and say what I want to say, which should be relevant to what I'm asking.
Can you respond, SPDG? I think what Honorable Jacobs is concerned with, when we visited GIPCO and we had a report and we've been telling the Department of Labor, even when we were there with the CEO, you know, there are people who have been there for long time. And these people, they're doing a very good job. Some are even retiring. But the skills is going to retire also with no one learning from them. So I think that's what Honorable Jacobs wants to understand, that are you taking this into consideration? What is the department going to do? Because we went to Port Elizabeth, Western Cape, and Devon, Peter Marisbeck, yes, and Peter Marisbeck, KZN. So, and we were also even told that sooner there will be other shared employment centers in other provinces that they don't have, for example, Mpumalanga and Limpopo. So, we would like to see this like expanding. So, can you clarify Honorable Jacobs on that, or Honorable Member? Because even if he raises a question, it's not his concern alone. So, all of us, thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson, and again, Honorable Jacobs. If we go to Chapter 6 on the promotion of, that is, promotion of supported work, that is the whole idea. But I must be upfront and say, in terms of providing full function training, it won't be the case, and the reasons are simple. Skills development is with the Department of Higher Education and Training. For the factories to do that, for young people to be trained in those areas, they will do it, but for that they will have to get the necessary accreditation from the Department of Higher Education and Training. They need representation around that issue. It's the same argument around government schools, around the Department of Health and all that. The authority around the certification process and so on. I think honorable members will remember that until 2009, the Department of Labor was responsible for that. The president decided that that function should go elsewhere, and I think all of us respected that. So that, but insofar as training new people that come in with disabilities as we have defined, it will happen. It will be the case. It will not be a case where you open the factories for everybody to come in. And that I think the bill is in Chapter 6 is very clear on that one. And that is why I spend time trying to clarify the kind of people with disabilities. New people with disabilities, insofar as that aspect is concerned, it will be done. But providing normal training like any other institutions, like CITAS, that's not the intention of the bill. I don't know if I clarified that one.
Thanks for this tradition. But it is not addressing what I thought it was addressing. Because I was also going to ask if that was the case, because there is this crowdfunding. I was going to say, where is the money for skills development? Because if we did that, skills development is another source of funding where we had to tap funding. But as it is, Chair, this is not addressing our concern. I'm not happy. You know, when I read this, I was happy that even on us, the department is addressing what we have raised. But as it is, this bill does not address it. And we are just misusing the resource that we have in government. Because as we said, there are a lot of skills in this sheltered employment where our youth can tap that skills. But now we are saying, we are waiting until we are silent. But if we want to make a link between this and skill development, there must be that linkage. So that these people could go there and get those skills, and after getting those skills, they can move out, start their own cooperatives to employ somewhere. Because what we are talking about, there is a lot of skills in this factory, and we should not be used, which is why they're just idle. And we are not addressing that. As Honorable Mathia said, our people don't have jobs, our children, our youth don't have jobs. It is because also they don't have the skills. But if we were using that to accommodate our youth, to get skills, to get employment, I think it would be a better step. But as it is, I don't know what we are trying to address with this bill. If we are not trying to address what we have raised. So in this, I don't know. I'm just disappointed if it does not address what we thought it was going to address.
Thank you. Honorable
You made mention of promotion of employment of youth and other vulnerable work sectors. The way it stands, is there a possibility of of putting in flesh to an extent that our concerns are considered in this thing? Or as it stands, is there a sentence that you understand to be addressing our concerns? That's just what I want to know, because we cannot go on with the concerns that we have now, the concerns we mentioned before this bill not being addressed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. On the same issue, with our listings to this shelter factories, we saw that a lot of the people who are sitting there, as our previous member said, they've got the skills, but they sit there without jobs because there isn't funds to get the necessary equipment to factorize certain furniture for places. And that is what worried me at the end of the day. What is the use of these factories? Because the most of that people sitting there is old people, disability people who are sitting there, and with no funds to provide to them and to bring in, as the member said, young youth, what they can train. I think in the time they sit there without job, they can train people. They can train our youth and give them the necessary skills how to do the job. So I'm worried about that. And my question is, why we have that factories all over the country and it is not coming to something useful in our communities?
Mr. Murutuba, I think maybe it wasn't you. I'm not sure you are the FPDG now. But when we were speaking about the employment shelter employment, maybe that report had a department, you know, to actually respond to members. And the department go and study the report and look at, you go back, you yourself, like we did, to the sheltered employment. And also see how you can talk to the Department of Higher Education, where the skills have been shifted, the skills have been shifted to. See how together this department and that department can work together to make sure that those employment, sheltered employment, are now doing what the members are raising. Can you respond to us and tell us what is the department going to do Because we're going to hammer and hammer and hammer, and then we want to be certain that the department, there is something that the department is going to do, and report back to these members on the move that you have taken to make sure that this issue of youth being skilled in that sheltered employment is being done. Over to you. Honorable, but you didn't ask, you must raise up your hand. Honorable, yeah, well, welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome, Dan.
Now, I want to raise some concern with the Department of Labor and the Department of Home Affairs. We look at this department is not taking care of our people in this country. Reasons will say, raising that concern. Anybody comes from outside of this country, we come and hold a position as a HOD, especially universities and everything. Guys, over change our government's vote of failure wins. Why did I only get all of these laws here in Parliament is proposed by you. No way we are, we support and see the young people. You should be sit down to deal with this issue in this year's note. Another point, Mamu Temba covers me. Well, I was worried we are acting SOD. We should work on the SOD, our higher education. These things, to train people in the issue of certificate. Very simple thing. You deal with this issue. My initial level, not over to find a political board minister, but is it? Because my initial level, now we committee, all the personal committee, we support this thing. I don't think we could pull cool. Just corporate governance, we should be near an environment.
Thank you, Mr. Murutuwa. Over to you.
Chairperson, I kind of understand the concern actually. I was trying to explain two things. We, in this field, we sat with the Department of Higher Education and all other departments. Honorable members must remember that in developing this legislation, we still have the Skills Development Act that we were instructed to see how best to craft. Now, if we go to Section 43, Chapter 6, Section 43C, Section 43C says, functions of the supported employment sectors are to see, develop and implement programs that promote the employability of persons with disabilities, including persons with permanent disablement as defined in the compensation, employment, that is occupational injuries, and all this. Now, that clause was agreed to after initially when we had a clause on table. The objection from the higher education to have skills development in there was that you will be transferring the mandate unnecessarily. And there, I think I'm trying to say that there is no prohibition under this act from anyone to change. The sheltered employment factors, including people who are there currently, including the new ones that are going to come, will continue to be trained. The issue that we had to deal with was whether you say the sheltered employment factors must provide training. And in doing that, I think everyone agrees that any company can and should provide training. The only thing that I'm saying is that they will continue to also provide that function. But education was of the view that for them to discharge that function, they will have to get the necessary accreditation. What it simply means is that we must have in sheltered, in the current sheltered employment factories that we're going to call supported employment factories, tutors, assessment processes, material for training, and all those things that are necessary so that when the assessment of people is done and they can be certificated by the education department, we only have all those things. And for that, the agreement between ourselves was that you don't necessarily need a provision in the legislation for that to happen because it's a given. And I think that was the issue that that I was trying to clarify without saying that FKS will never provide training. We're doing it every day. New people that are coming in, for them to do the kind of furniture that we are producing, each time we introduce new product that we provide into hospitals, to other departments. There is a lot of training that is happening on a daily basis at SCF. The only thing that we are now doing is to sort out the accreditation arrangement so that the people that we are training can be given the necessary certificate. I thought that that's what I was clarifying. But the issue is not an educational issue, because that is a given. It's a requirement for every employer to train people that they employ. I don't know if Chairperson, I can go to other points because they are linked to the same issues. There were a number of questions that I was supposed to respond to.
Okay, let me get from the list. Madam Bisha.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that and believe that as South African leadership, no matter from which organization, where in the event or air, the fact and the truth is that we are doing a bitter pill, but the effect of that bitter pill does not have the same effect on individuals. For example, we are sitting here and we are politicians and you are implementing the policies whatever that you do and we adopt and approve and do all those things. But then we are doing that not feeling the pain, because it was the 15th last Good Friday. We are getting something to make ends meet. And there are a lot of people who cannot do this. They don't even, they are just living, but this comes in. And when we have documents like this, we are doing them, not testing the real bitter pills they are tasting. So I should think whatever you say that things will be like this and this and this. It's not that we do not have faith in this department, but we need the department to be practical and do it in a way that will resolve the problem that we are having in South Africa. Because really, it is not nice. I will repeat again, I am not xenophobic, but it is not nice to see South Africa full of foreigners who are working, and South Africa full of the unemployed people. And whereas we say we are your leaders, we will give you this and this and this. And it comes back into our face. And our grandchildren will go back to slavery because we are not implementing the way it changes their life. It changes the lives of those who have documents, who have this and that and that. You can see the gap of the unemployed and the employed. We are moving in because we are putting on shoes and toothpicks. We are putting on all these things. And they cannot avoid that. And we say we are the voice of the masses of South Africa. And we can only achieve doing away with that poverty and unemployment. It's what we pass in here encompasses all the methods that will make us to prove that we tried. I'm very, very much concerned because theory...
Can you round up honorable...
Because theory is important, but practice is the most important thing. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I think there are questions that have been raised by members.
to the department. Can I appeal with you, honorable members, that we give the department chance to respond to questions that have been raised, and I'll give you another chance again so that you say what you want to say. But for this point in time, I want to give you, Mr. Morutuba, to respond to all the questions that have been raised. We didn't say it's the end of the meeting. The way we are speaking now is like we are closing. Let's not make closing remarks, please. Over to you, Mr. Morutuba.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me go back again. Apart from the question around the intentions of the bill from Honorable Jacobs, there was a question around whether the bill addresses the problem of youth employment. And yes, it is the case. If we go to Chapter 2, Clause 6, it talks about the promotion of youth and other, that is promotion of employment of youth and other vulnerable wage seekers. And that is where the minister is empowered to establish schemes that are aimed at addressing the plight of young people, because we have statistics that indicate that more than 35% of young people are unemployed. In fact, youth are the hardest hit, and part of the core of providing these free services is mainly aimed and targeting young people in the main. On the question of training of youth, which was raised also by yourselves, I think here we try to draw a distinction to say the skills development provides a framework for training. However, for the question of information, if we go to the purpose of this act, it clarifies the referral purpose, the question of careers information, the question of career guidance, and all that. So that there's a distinction between the employment services functions and the skills development functions. On the point about Clause 5, where you basically, the question on the board member was saying, are there no other models? And I think here, there are two models proposed that we negotiated extensively at NetNet. In terms of the ILO conventions, basically the third model that we have actually come across is the model, I mean, here you have got the government in the public, the private, where the private sector continues to provide private employment agents. And in all the legislations that we have reviewed, that we have commissioned across the world, government, including the ILO conventions, play a role in regulating the private employment agents. The third model that we know of is where the private sector, that is the whole private employment agency, is run completely out of government, out of the private sector, and it's an agency that is stand alone, like all other public and enterprises, and it runs or generates its income from commissions that it makes. And we have looked at that model, and we looked at the advantages and disadvantages of that model, and with social partners, at NetNet, and after lengthy stakeholder consultation, we agreed on the two models, that is on the model where we've got a public and private. Clause 10 on vacancies does not say every employer, and I think in my presentation I did raise this issue. Contrary to the fact that this legislation is going to require every employer to register vacancies, 10.1a says the minister may, after consulting the board, make regulations requiring employers to notify the department of any vacancies or new positions in the establishment in a manner and within such a period as the minister may determine. Now, the initial version said must. Now, the may is basically there and is in line with the current skills development and I did say section 23, where the minister and the board, remember the board in terms of chapter 5 is constituted by stakeholders coming from all organizations, and the business, trade unions, the community, and other state governments that are serving on the on the board. Section 12, around financing of the public employment services. I think those members who managed to go, especially of the Labour Portfolio Committee, to places like France and to places like Germany, and they produce a report. The staff component of employment, that is public employment agencies in those countries, and we commissioned a report using University of Cape Town, is something like 14 to 15 times what we have in South Africa. We are nowhere near. In fact, in Zimbabwe, they've got a staff complement that is much higher on public employment services than what we have in our case. And here it's not, the section doesn't say money collected from UIF has been taken and fund public employment services. It basically says in those instances where the funds have got projects that are employment creation, instead of giving those monies or using the services of private agencies, currently like I give an example, there could be a relationship, and that is how most employment agencies across the world are operating, where there is an agreement that is signed by the board of the UI, because you can't act outside of the UI Act, and the AG will have to scrutinize all those processes as members of parliament, and the UI board that the project that is running is in line with the purpose of the employment, that is unemployment insurance fund or the compensation fund. Prospecting around the registration of private employment agencies, I think I was I did go in explaining the relationship between section 158 of the Labour Relations Act and the private employment agencies, because here the issue is that for now the trade unions are saying banning their labour brokers. The fact of the matter is that even ourselves as the department, we cannot take any labour broker to court to say we are breaking this law. But everyone agrees that there must be a framework that basically says how do they function. Now, the labour brokers, as defined in the Labour Relations Act, that is the Labour Relations Act, is a very big area we set through the negotiation. What this section does is that it actually deals with their registration and to make sure that they comply and we know where they are, where they're operating from, what they are doing, and what is it that they are supposed to comply with, and we can go and use the inspectors to check. And if they are not performing functions that are in line with their registration, you can deregister them and they'll cease to practice in the area. Honourable Sibande, I think the questions were again in relation to chapter 2 around the protection of workers. Indeed, the whole idea of the that is chapter 2, clause 5, is aimed at making sure that we protect. We provide free services, we assist citizens of the country to be the first point of preference when employment comes. We remove all obstacles that are there in terms of entry into employment, unreasonable requirements. We assist them in terms of preparedness for interviews and so on, and that they're able to get into employment. The reason why we're doing that is because when citizens work, they contribute in terms of taxes, they contribute in terms of a whole range of things, crime rate goes down and all. And the opposite is also true. If citizens are not working, they get involved in criminal activities and so on and so on. And I think as part of preparing them to enter into employment, our labor relations process and so on, the education around their rights and all that, I think that will also happen.
so that when they get into a factory, they know what is what to expect, what obligations they have, and so on. Now, there was a question around clause 8, which was also raised by Honorable Kuneba and Honorable Mabija again. The issue here, Honorable Members, is that all of us, and I think all of you have traveled, and you know how difficult it is to visit any country. When you apply for the visa, there are clauses there that says, what are you coming to do? And if you are on business, you must disclose the kind of business. And all of you have signed that visa application that says, you are not going to use that visa or permit to gain employment. And if you stay 1 or 2 days more, the police in other countries are coming there, and you, before you know it, you'll be at the airport waiting for the next plane, and may even be arrested for overstaying. The problem that we are sitting with in South Africa, and I think this is the frustration that Honorable Mabija said, I'm a member of the Immigration Board. In the Immigration Board, we've got the police, we've got the intelligence, we've got Home Affairs. It's chaired by Home Affairs, under the Minister of Home Affairs. We've got all sorts of agencies, the Department of Health, the Department of Education, and so on. These issues that we are raising are issues that we are dealing with. We also have a Minister's Committee of SADC, both Home Affairs and of Labour. The issue of migration is a major problem, and it's a major problem for us as South Africans, as a receiving country. And in fact, there are a lot of things that we are dealing with in the Immigration Board. In fact, Mpumalanga and Limpopo are our biggest problem because of the nature of the border and what is happening in those areas. But I can just assure you, members of the committee, that working as a cluster of government departments, we are addressing issues that start from the that is the management of health issues, management of crime, drug, illegal transportation of goods, and so on, and coming to the country because of the border policy as collective departments. The issue that we're trying to deal with under Section 8 is basically to say all of us, politicians, Department of Labor, we have got an obligation to citizens. And if we read clause 8.1, it says an employer may not employ a foreign national within the territory of the Republic of South Africa prior to such foreign national producing an applicable and valid work permit issued in terms of the Immigration Act. The issue that is not happening now, what is happening is that lots and lots of employers are employing what we call illegal migrants without producing papers. There is also a big problem in terms of people who are coming in as asylum seekers, because we don't have camps in South Africa. Once people are in the country, they say, no, I don't want to work, I want asylum. You just need to go out of this department, of Parliament right now, and just opposite the Department of Labor Center, just on the Home Affairs office here, just next where we are. It's full on a daily basis because of people coming to apply for asylum seekers. Any one of you can just go in there any day. Now, the problem with that process is that once people apply for their permit, because there are no camps, they start working everywhere, or they operate in shops. You can go to any restaurant in Cape Town, talk to security people everywhere, talk to domestic workers in most cases. That's where we are having serious problems in terms of employment of foreign nationals. And what this cause is basically reminding us is that it's illegal to employ anyone without a permit. And secondly, if we catch you, you will be entitled to fines in terms of the Immigration Act. Thirdly, like the repeat case that Honorable Kronenberg is using, we all agree that we don't have skills in other areas. But before you employ anybody under the pretense that there is
you must first prove that you have done searches locally to determine that there are no such cases. We have been to Nairobi, we have been to all those places, and there are problems now because even the people that were brought in on the Bukunfa under the disguise that were skilled people, some of them were people who were trained in Thailand in a crash course for 3 weeks. They are not equal to artisans that were trained locally that went for training for something like 3 years with 4 years experience. And agencies are bringing those people because we are saying we have a shortage of skills. And you know, one of the problems we are sitting with now, and you may have read in the newspaper, is that the boilers that were welded by some of those people that were brought in from overseas, those people were not fully qualified artisans. They were not checked with SAPA to check that these people are indeed qualified. So the clause basically says, if you say there is shortage of skill, prove to us that you have looked locally first before OMA first can give you permit. But clause 4, 8-4, is addressing the problem that you are raising. It says, an employee who is employed without a valid work permit is entitled to enforce any claim that the employee may have in terms of any statutes or contract of employment against his or her employer or any person who is liable in terms of the law. What it basically says is that if you employ a person without a valid permit and we catch you, with Home Affairs we have agreed that the process of putting those people back is not addressing our problem. That employee must be made to pay. If the person says, for instance, I worked for 10 years for this employer without being registered, that employer will have to pay for 10 years all the monies that are owed to that illegal migrant in terms of pension funds and all those things before those people are deported. And this is to try and address the problem of getting local employers to employ migrant workers on the understanding that they are going to pay them lower salaries. So basically saying, even if you employ an illegal migrant, you must know if your court will do checks. If it's 10 years, we'll have to pay them the 10 years salaries. Because what other ministers are complaining about in other countries is that there are people, using Honorable Sanders' example, some of these people are being recruited and they are being used illegally to mine. When they get injured, the South African government is responsible. Some are being used in chemicals. Once they get sick, they are sent to Zimbabwe, Botswana, and so on to go and die because the health system cannot pay for them. They were not paying for taxes in their country. So those governments are saying, South Africa, help us to deal with this problem because your employers are employing our people under inferior conditions. They get sick. Once they get sick, they retrench them. They come back home to die. So that is the problem that we are trying to address in terms of 8-4. I think on the question of syndicates, I think I've addressed that problem. In fact, we know scary things that are happening. In one such an example, we participated in an operation with Home Affairs, and within a matter of 2 hours, close to 1,500 people coming from Somalia who landed via Mozambique were arrested in the Bay Bridge port because of the syndicates that are operating in that area. In fact, it is a big problem in Mpumalanga, and the Mozambican government was sensitized to that issue, and they are very aware of what is happening in terms of the new airport. But I think the necessary agencies that have the applicable powers are dealing with the issue. And honorable members are free to summon also the immigration and Home Affairs courts to get a briefing around how some of those problems are being addressed. And
maybe I may not have been clear, Honorable Matija, on the levels of unemployment. I think the reality of what we're trying to do is to say we've got high levels of unemployment. And if all of us are serious about eradicating levels of unemployment, we have to stop paying lip service to levels of unemployment. Because we cannot, government use money for Australia, but 3/4 of the people that are employed work on Australia are foreigners. So what is the use of the investment on the roads and all that? And that's why we're trying to say, working with the ships, the various projects that have been identified. One of the things that we did not do during 2010, because of the rush to complete projects, was to make sure that as much as possible, we maximize the number of South Africans that are involved in those projects. Because otherwise, we will have projects, people will be paid 7 to 8% of the money will be foreigners, and we live with the project. And with the infrastructure project, we're trying to ensure that all projects that happen with employment will target citizens, and only in those exceptional areas. And the section is not saying we're making room for foreigners. It is basically saying our first preference is South Africans, and in those instances where foreigners are brought in, we are going to be very, very, very strict in terms of demanding A, that you advertise, B, that you search locally. You will have to convince us why do you need this person from this country when you have high levels of unemployment. And if indeed you have to bring in a person from outside, in terms of this session, it also requires those employers to have plans to train local people, because very often with the corporate payments that we have, they are given for 5 years. After 5 years, they want to apply for another 5 years. And in the 5 years period, they never trained South Africans. So what is going to happen is that in the future, if we recommend to Home Affairs to give a company a corporate payment to bring whatever people, because they did not, we did not have South Africans available. If 5 years expires, that company will find it very, very difficult to get under 5 years corporate payment, because they will have to explain to us why didn't they train locals in the 5 year period. That's what the section is trying to do, to make it very difficult for companies to bring in foreign nationals when we have local people who are unemployed and want to get them into employment. That is what the section is trying to do. The monitoring systems that we are supposed we are having to implement the bill. I think here, Chairperson, you also raised this question. The issue is that in terms of the funds, we have worked with the inspection and enforcement to understand the funds. We are currently retraining inspectors to enforce the sections of the Act. We have also worked with the Home Affairs officials to understand how to deal with that situation, so that they work with our inspectors. The ESPs, that is the Employment Services Practitioners, also have to be retrained in terms of the bill, so that they can assist us in monitoring the implementation of the bill. Obviously, we know that the first year is not going to be easy because we don't necessarily have the kind of resources we want. But we've had discussions with Treasury, and indications are that in the second year and third year, because we ask them to go to other countries to have a look at the system, so they can be convinced that this is the route to go. We believe that they will give us the necessary resources. Thank you. There may be other questions that I've committed. I don't know, Mr. Rachel. Okay, on plus 42 to 47, sorry, again, the
very clear in terms of how these factories are supposed to be managed. The functions under 43A, B, C, and D were negotiated with the Ministry for Women, Children and People with Disabilities, the Department of Higher Education and Training. We also discussed these functions extensively with the various organizations involved in disability, including the definition. If you go to the definition, like I said, these factors are going to be limited to a specific type of disability, not every level of disability. And again, we respect the recommendations of honorable members around what they would like to see in terms of, like I said, training. The factories as part of the expansion process, we did say that they are going to secure the necessary accreditation. It simply means that we are going to comply with the Department of Higher Education and Training requirements in order to be accredited to train people. We are also discussing with the military veterans because there is a process of looking at people that are 45 years and above currently in the South African National Defense Force as to say what do we do with them beyond a certain age. We are also in discussion with the correctional services, as members may know that locking inmates without doing anything in prison is a problem, and they are now being put into productive use to produce products. So the question is, how do we balance the access of those products in the labor market? We are also having discussions with the Department of Environmental Affairs in removing all the alien plants. They are using the pulp to manufacture wood, which they want to sell to all these departments. And the question is, how do we get access to utilizing them? And I don't know, Chairperson, it may be that this section may not have addressed all your expectations, but in discussion with the Department of Public Service and Administration, is that in the details of a government component, that's where you flesh out around how they operate, their location, the expansion plans and all that, and in negotiation with Treasury, because some people are of the view that we should not continue to receive subsidy. But if honorable members look at that section, we made provision for the Department of Labor, and this is something that we are already doing now, not only to fund the shattered employment factories. As we speak, there are factories for the blind. There are factories with people that are deaf. There are organizations that are facilitating the placement of people with employment of people with disabilities. We are funding those organizations. And the reason why we are doing that is because they are promoting the employment of people with disability into employment. And that section also gives ministers the necessary powers over and above the supported factories that are under government to also give subsidies to organizations that are operating in this space and providing employment of people with disabilities. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. I heard Mr. Marutuba talking about the permits. And here in Cape Town, I'm telling you, the streets are full of people with permits. But those permits are not genuine. There are officials in the Home Affairs Department who have seen the case of people, many in the streets, were selling this permit. And when you check, you have a tool to check if the permit that you find a person with, whether it's a genuine
I heard this because we move out of parliament and we be moving around. And sometimes you listen because we walk around with our ears on the ground. People complaining that it was a woman and her daughter, they were complaining that this foreign nationals, they buy from these people. And they are so expensive. Over 5,000, 10,000 per minute. And they do business. And we don't have money to buy permits to do this business because we are unemployed. We don't know whether the government is not aware of this. You see, you are explaining everything, showing passion for the matters of South Africa. But on the other hand, there are those who are they only think about having a lot of money. They don't care what is happening. So, may you please, what I'm saying, I don't say is reality. What I'm saying is what I heard from the streets. So, may you please try to investigate to be certain whether it is true or not. Because you are working with all your heart's back. Somebody somewhere is messing the department up. And they are also messing the labor department up because you work as one. That's what I wanted to teach you on. Because you will work and work and work until all your fingers are half.
Honorable Khunevas, followed by Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a very same argument that the previous speaker had. Money, you can buy everything. And that is absolutely the truth. These people who are sitting on our streets, foreigners, got documents in their hands, they buy it somewhere in South Africa. There are people who are buying and sell these things to these foreigners, and they've got the jobs at the end of the day. I'm very worried. You said we've got a responsibility to the people of South Africa. And I totally agree with you. And then we must look into a couple of issues in South Africa which is not going in the right way. And that is why we sit with this problem. You know, at the borders, they call Mosima small Zimbabwe. Because all the South Africans who are stayed in that area is driven away further into South Africa, away from the borders. And the foreigners is putting their shops and things up on the borders, and they are the entrepreneurs who's going on and make money out of South Africa and on behalf of the people of South Africa. And I'm very, very worried about that. What are we doing on our borders? Especially on the Mosina, where the people is flocking in from Zimbabwe. We sit here in South Africa with more than 4 million Zimbabweans in the States. I was there with elections, and that is what the people told me in Zimbabwe. They are getting to South Africa because they are feeling free in South Africa. And that is why we sit not only with Zimbabwe people here, but the whole Africa is looking into South Africa. We had a problem in Bits. That's where I'm coming from. Province where I'm coming from. Granite. They take the granite out of the mountains there, and they export it to China. And there they cut it up and bring it back to South Africa. What happened now? China is sending their people to South Africa, especially to Brits, in the factories. Now they are working there to train the South Africans, but they are never getting back to China. And that is a big problem we have in that area.
I think as members of parliament, actually, it's our duty also when we see those things, to actually make the department aware so that the department can deal with it. Because like, I think Honorable Mabi just said earlier, we are the ears on the ground. So it's our duty as members to make the department aware of what is happening. Can you round up and the Honorable Sand?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you. I already reported this to the provincial legislature long time ago, and nothing happened about it.
So now I'm meeting it for the first time in Parliament as well. The asylum seekers, you talk about the asylum seekers. There's a lot of them staying in houses in Pretoria. I do not know exactly where the places is to be waited. They are waiting to be sent back to their countries. But the moment they arrive in the countries, 2 weeks, they are back in South Africa. And what I want to know, where is our control measures regarding these things? Because, and that's what you said, we get back to that, I'm not a chairperson. They've got permits and they've got documents, and someone is giving it out, or handing it out, or selling it, and in 2 weeks' time, they are back in South Africa, and they're continuing with the entrepreneurship in South Africa. What happened to the most of our, just in 10th Street here, you can go and have a look there. People are shipping it from foreigners' countries, and they have businesses. They take our people from South Africa out of jobs because there's no control on our borders where people is coming from. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Flander.
Chairperson, I'll appeal strongly to control emissions so that we focus on the bill. Because we're supposed to talk to the bill. On the city side, if we, our references, maybe talk to some of the clauses which we're supposed to deal. Because I'll set an example. If we talk about the topic which is debating us now about foreign.
Let me explain, Honorable Svante. I left members to actually say, because maybe as they will be going to their constituencies, they will be seeing these things and maybe they will have some way of dealing with them. So I left them to actually ventilate. I think the bill has been explained thoroughly and what we are doing now. I thought the members, they're raising issues from their constituencies, because we are going down now and they will be able to deal with those issues on the ground with the assistance of the department. So I didn't want to stop anyone. I did that deliberately. Thank you. You can continue.
Come on,
thank you, honorable members. We have exhausted the questions from the bill. We have satisfied ourselves by the look of things. Now we're going to break, and after the break we will go close by close. Because the lunch is going to be set outside. The meeting stand adjourned for now. For we coming back at, let's say, at 12:40. Can we come back at 13:45? 13:45. Thank you. The meeting is adjourned for now until 12:40.